Often when I get up into the pulpit, things change. I look down at what I've spent hours and hours writing, refining, thinking that I've got the perfect sermon. And then as I walk up these steps, things change. And I'm trying to think whether or not I should allow that to happen or should I just squelch it. Nah, I'm coming down there. This is what you taught me to do. So here we are. We're gathered. Christ King Sunday, or Reign of Christ, as the newer saying is. We find ourselves at the end of another church year. We're going to put a church year behind us, and then we're going to move on to a brand new year. Brand new readings. Well, not brand new readings. We've all been to readings, but we'll be going into what's called Cycle C. So why am I standing here asking? I'm going to ask you some questions. Okay? You just celebrated your 175th anniversary. Congratulations. That is a long, long, long history. There aren't many churches today that have the honor of being able to say, we are 175 years old and we are still moving on. Our spirit still burns brightly, as it does here. Now, a year ago, your pastor was here. There was no thinking that somewhere down the road, she might be leaving and going to another congregation. So everything seemed to be in place. You knew who was going to be up here on Sunday morning. There's got to be a bit of a comfort knowing that you're going to have a familiar face. Not that my face isn't familiar. So here's what I'm going to ask, a couple of questions. I'd like you to share. Okay? If you don't want to, that's fine. At least think about the questions that I'm going to ask. Since it is the end of the year, and we're going to be entering into a new year, it's good to look back and see where the congregation here at Zion has been, where it is, and where you're headed. As I said a year ago, you pretty well were stable, you knew where you were headed. Now the call process and a whole bunch of other stuff are coming up. When I met with Brenda and Jane, we talked about stretching the congregation. Doing things that you may not be familiar with or something that's new. The first thing we did was, you were familiar with setting 10, right? But then we weren't sure whether we should use it or just continue with what you were used to. So we decided we were going to step outside the box. We were going to engage setting 10 and do it. Now, did anybody find that to be painful? No? Were you stretched in any way, a little bit, stepping out of what you're used to? There's got to be some fear to say, man. So here's what I want you to think. 175 years. What do you, as a member here, remember to be your highlight of your faith in the time that you've been with this congregation? Is it an event, or a person, or even a pastor, that influenced you in a way in your faith that allowed it to grow or expand beyond what you normally encounter? If you want to share it, I welcome you to share it. If you don't want to share it again, think about it. Were there times when you had that hallelujah moment that something suddenly came to mind based on what somebody had said, or maybe it was an act of kindness, or maybe it was the opposite of an act of kindness. Maybe it was something that didn't make you happy. That's a moment of growth as well in our faith, as much as we don't want it to be. Anybody think of anything?
25 years ago, when we had our 150th,
I'm trying to find this disembodied voice.
Yeah.
25 years ago, when we celebrated our 150th year, that's 25 years ago, this church was packed. The walls just rang with the singing. It was a very moving service. I'll never forget it. Will that happen again? It would be great.
And it's 25 years later. What are some of the changes that you've encountered? I can name a change. We went from the green book to the red book. It didn't seem to be very painful, but that still was a big change. I don't remember the other book that I'm in, so that red book before that. And then there was a black one in there somewhere. Think about the changeover to a new hymn book. It's not easy. I hear more bad things about new materials than I do good things. But then it starts to settle in, and then you get used to it, and then... But this new, this BLW, it still seems to be people complaining with. Not as much as the green one, believe it or not. So, do you think anything else that's happened that's been major, that's impacted your worship?
I would say that allowing children to go up for communion, it was a huge thing for us. I mean, we kind of fought for that for a long time. And I still remember, as many of us do, that were little here, Mark, everybody went up for communion, and we all sat in the pew and said, well, how come they get to go and we don't? You know, and so I love it when the little kids come up and their hands are already flipped out, and they may not know exactly what's going on, but it's already... They're already getting that, and it's way more meaningful than sitting back in the pew going, how come the big guys get to go and not us? And that was big for us too.
What about a female pastor? Was that not a change? At one time, women weren't allowed to be pastors. Women actually had very little participation within the committees, unless it had something to do with the kitchen, or knitting, or, you know, they kind of put you off in the corner saying that this is what you can do, this is what you can't do. I think we had, and correct me if I'm wrong, our first female council of chair, or was there someone before me? I'm just trying to remember if... But anyways, even for a council chair to be a female, what a change.
Even just for on council.
On council, right? Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Interesting. I was a baby. I didn't realize that there had never been women on the council. And this year they elected 3. There hadn't been since the 70s. That's hard to believe. That's going to be a big change for Les Armstrong. He's going to have women telling him what to do. which is a good thing. Okay, how about naming? Can somebody name what their fear is? We all have fears. What is your fear for this congregation? Okay, not having a pastor. Others?
I'd say the declining attendance.
Declining attendance.
Yeah. Not having the financial means to keep the building going.
Do you know that there's only a few people in seminary right now? And where are we going to get our pastors? The number of people going to seminary has declined dramatically. I'm part of a group that's going to retire. It's going to take away a lot of people if and when we decide to retire. So there is going to be a shortage. Obviously, the offering is not what it was 25 years ago at the 150th anniversary. That has changed. People were wondering why at Trinity our attendance is down. People like me, I suppose, but what I figured out was in the 11 years that I've been there, I've buried 80 people. And 3/4 of those 80 people were in the pew on Sunday mornings. There's one reason. Our congregation is aging. People are dying. Of course, nobody's coming in. And we're talking about bringing our youth in and getting them to revitalize and fill the positions of people retired from jobs they've done for decades, and it's not happening. We confirm our kids, and in most cases, you don't see them again. Why did I hear it? I've done a few confirmation weddings over the last year for you guys, so with your pastor's permission, of course. So what other fears? Do you have something that just...
Fear of lost opportunities.
Lost opportunities.
That we were too afraid to try.
Okay. But that's change. How do we deal with change? We're not very good at dealing with change. And in the end, sometimes we just give in because, well, that's it. But we don't embrace that change. We just say, okay, we'll move on. So embracing opportunity. There's a quote by Wayne Gretzky that's hanging in the restaurant in Tavistock. I can't remember what it is. But it's something to do. If you don't take that shot, you'll never take that shot. So. Okay, we've talked about enough about fears. I'm sure that we all have some more fears. Now this one's going to be a little harder. But I want you to share with me, what is your hope for the future of this congregation? What are your hopes? Who's got a hope that they hope will come to fruition?
The attendance increases.
Okay, attendance increases. Others? Hopes?
We grow and communicate
and
work together better.
Okay, grow, communicate, work together. Okay. I think you're already doing that to a degree, but we can always do better.
We can always do better.
Yes, yes.
Okay. But we can have more youth come
down. Youth? Yeah. Yeah. There are youth around. I go to youth events. You don't think there's no youth at our churches, but there is. There is, and they do gather, and they do worship, and they do grow in their faith. Anything else that's a hope? What a hope for yourself. I'm waiting for somebody to say, I hope that I will be challenged in my faith. Now that doesn't sound like hope, does it? But if I were sitting with you, and I can, as a pastor, say this well, I would hope that I would be challenged in my faith. I would hope that things would not remain the same, which in a church they tend to do that. I would hope that I would be challenged in my faith, that I would grow, that I wouldn't become complacent or comfortable with what I've got, always aware that things are changing. Our world is changing. Our churches aren't keeping up, it seems to be. But a lot of congregations aren't keeping up. They want to do the same old, same old. Those are the churches that are going to probably get care right now. Our structure is changing. Everybody wants a pastor, right? Because that's the model we're used to. And I have to say yes to because it's my job. So I want to take my job away. That's going to change. Every congregation is not going to have a pastor in the future. It's going to be a shared ministry as one option. At one time, there used to be 80% full-time, 20% part-time. That's reversed. Now it's almost like 20% full-time, and the rest are part-time calls. That's changing. One of the things that I've picked up recently, and this was a comment that was made by, not a pastor, but by a lady person, that at one time we were a church of families. We were family-based. You guys go back 7 generations or more? When I say family-based, I talk about generations. A lot of families have come through these doors. A lot of families have been part of this congregation. Are those numbers going to return? It can be a hope. I don't know. I don't want to say no. But I don't want to say yes either, because we know. We're realistic about what the odds are. But it said that our church is becoming more of a programming church. We're moving away from families and we're engaging in programming. But somewhere along the way, we're losing that family core that's always been part of our congregations, especially rural congregations. The family core is eroding for a whole bunch of reasons, which is connected to why we don't have young people or families in our pews on Sunday mornings. So is there anything that's burning in your mind you want to share before I finish up? Anybody have any other comment? I just want to add one thing. When I was here as pastor, where I drew my energy from was our social events. That helped my faith dramatically. Was engaging with people around the meal, even having some guy dress up with a meatball outfit, right? Those were moments that I will never forget, and those were important moments that I would hope that you would engage, and that's not the magic answer that everything's going to get better, but the more you spend together in social situations, the more you invite the public to come in and be part of, which you do. I'm not saying that you don't. There are many opportunities for people to come here that aren't members and be involved. But that's the kind of thing you need to embrace. You need to embrace your community. You need to bring your community. Not to convert them to membership, but to expose them to the gospel. Expose that we preach the gospel, that we live the gospel, and that we want to share it. And there's a right way to do it, and there's probably the wrong way to do it. Most of us, even pastors, aren't well versed in doing it the proper way sometimes. But bring people in, bring people in, and share with them. Because you know the power of sharing this meal that we share every Sunday? Not every Sunday, I shouldn't say that. You guys don't do every Sunday. That you do share on Sundays? In Dallas, I'm pretty sure twice a month, too, so I would never enforce it upon Sunday. But gathering of a meal and the fellowship is just incredible. You really can't put an answer to it. So the purpose of this was just to sort of get your thoughts going. Thank you for listening. But carry the conversation on. This isn't the end of the conversation. This is something you can talk about at coffee hour, you can talk about at home, you can talk about everywhere else, including within your church. So don't let it just die off. Speak up. Speak about what excites you. You can also speak about what doesn't excite you. You gotta look at the both sides of it. And remember, on this Christ's Day Sunday, we don't draw our strength from each other. We draw our strength from Christ. Christ, we are called the Church of Christ. This congregation is the Church of Christ, and Christ is the focus. And Christ will carry us into the future. We may not be able to do it, but Christ will, and that's the hope we have.